Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast, Ready for Arab Liberties Current Affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. The police burst into the office of journalist Bulut Temirov in Bishkek, forcing his news outlet's employees onto the floor, and two officers sat on Temirov, the chief editor. Then they lift him up and made him empty his pocket. Bingo. A pouch of marijuana comes out of his pocket. This might sound like a paragraph from the transcript of a poorly scripted Hollywood movie, but the thing is, in this case, it happened, and it happened recently in Bishkek, and it could lead to possibly the demise of another independent media outlet in Kyrgyzstan, where independent journalism are increasingly squeezed since the current president coming to power. But in Temirov's case, the way events unfolded in his office, the backstory was equally interesting, strange, and obviously chilling for those who are still brave enough to touch sensitive issues like corruption in the country. Temirov is one of those Kyrgyz journalists who, despite repeated harassment of him and his team, has been carrying on landmark investigations involving corruption and corrupt practices of people in positions of power. So today, we are here to discuss the increasing challenges of investigative journalism in Kyrgyzstan and dig into the events surrounding journalist Bulut Temirov in terms of what does this case tell us about what might lie ahead. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Begaim Usanova, media expert and consultant and formerly the director of Media Policy Institute in Bishkek, Ilya Lazuski, the editor of the recent investigation on the crackdown against journalist Temirov and his team, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Press Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us on this important conversation. But before I head on, let me say this. The idea for this episode came from the recent breathtaking investigation about the crackdown on journalist Bulut Temirov and his team in Bishkek. The investigation was a joint project by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kyrgyz service, Azatlık Radyosu, OCCRP, and Club News. If you have not seen the report yet, I would suggest you stop listening to the podcast right here and check out the website of one of the partnering agencies and read the report. Having read the report, our discussion is going to make much more sense. So with this, let's get into this report. Obviously, given Temirov's case being a clear example of what we have in mind to discuss today, so I would start the conversation with the report and then expand on growing challenge of investigative journalism in the country. So, Ilya, please tell us how this report came about.
Well, we were shocked to hear about the raid on Bulut Temirov's office. There was actually a correspondent from our local partner, Klub, there on the scene. I think she just happened to be walking by, and she spoke with a colleague of Bulut's. You know, he has his own media outlet called Temirov Live, so it's not just him there. He has an office in Bishkek, and there was a raid going on, and Klub actually live-streamed the raid, and we saw watching that live stream that the lawyers weren't allowed inside at first, then only one lawyer was allowed, and then this whole story pretty quickly came out, you know, with Bulut yelling as he was being dragged essentially out of the office, they planted it, you know, and so that's how we learned that, you know, he and all his colleagues say that a little bag of marijuana was planted on him, which is obviously just a completely shocking thing to happen to an investigative journalist. I mean, I was just thinking, you know, even in Russia, when something like this happens, it's a pretty big scandal. It happened with in Russia, you know, within the past 2 years, but it's not that common even there. In Kyrgyzstan, known as the freest and most democratic country in Central Asia, it's very shocking. And we were looking into what Bulut Temirov was working on, and he was working on an investigation that had just come out 2 days before the raid about the head of the GKNB, the Kyrgyz Security Services. And there's a long history of Bulut being under pressure. And so we started putting everything together. And as you mentioned, you know, this raid was only the tip of the iceberg. And we got into the fact that he had found a hidden camera in his apartment a few months prior, literally built into the wall with a secret Wi-Fi router and a video recorder and a microphone. And then there was this horrific plot to basically entrap one of his employees.
Yeah.
She was approached at the gym by a young man. They started chatting. They were started exchanging text messages. He invited her on a weekend trip. And their sexual encounter ended up being recorded, as we discovered later. and as she discovered later, and she was pressured by agents from the Gakanba to report to them about what Bola Timirov, her employer, was working on, what kind of investigations were coming. And then, after the raid and after this compromising material was gathered, in the week after that, anonymous Facebook pages published these really aggressive, menacing videos that, first of all, accused Bolot of working with foreign intelligence services, and they were using documents that had been seized from his computer during the raid. So we can see this pipeline of the police, you know, allegedly for drug offenses, confiscating his outlet's computers and then taking documents from those computers and somehow passing them on to whoever produced these videos, anonymous videos, and publishing them. And then the same videos also made this completely wild accusation that this young woman had been forced by Timirov to sleep essentially with foreign donors in order to get money for the organization, which is a completely ridiculous accusation, of course, and just a very shameful thing to make up about somebody, obviously. And it's just very clear where this is all coming from. He was investigating the head of the security services, Tashiev, and then they're taking their revenge. And this whole saga is very shocking, especially in the context of Kyrgyzstan. So that's why we felt we had to do this story as quickly as possible and just put it out there and make sure that, you know, this does not happen without a response. And I think we've seen quite a response. And I'm happy to say that Bolot is not beaten down, and he's still going to fight the good fight and do his journalism. And we're very happy to see that.
And he's where he is currently. I mean, I know that he was taken for questioning, but what happened with that?
He was charged with drug possession and but released, you know, pending the investigation. So he's free right now. I think maybe they confiscated his passport, and I think there was some confusion about whether they had given him his passport back or not. But, you know, clearly, you know, he's being charged with a crime. And aside from his statement, you know, and his colleagues saying that the drugs had been planted, even the origins of that raid are very curious, because apparently some woman had claimed that he was forcing her to take drugs. And that's why the raid on his office took place. And it's very curious also that after this raid, the head of the Gakanba held a press conference talking about it, which is just strange considering this is the head of the security services of an entire country. And he's talking about one raid that resulted, even if it was true, in the confiscation of a small bag of marijuana. I mean, it's completely ridiculous.
Okay, since that event happened, what has been kind of sort of a storyline presented by the authorities and the steps being taken by the authorities in this regard? I mean, it looks like, I mean, the way that you described the story, too much work went into this case by the security officials, like, you know, trying to kind of lure one of his employees and get information from her, and using that information as a trap to threaten her and her family to work, cooperate with the authorities. I mean, it looks like too much work went into this by the security apparatus, by the Kyrgyzstan. So sort of a step-by-step visualization of the day when this happened and then what followed next.
Okay, so the story of the young woman had happened, I think it was started in December. The raid was in January. The secret camera that was found in his apartment was, I think, in the fall, if I'm remembering. I don't remember that exact timeline, but it sort of happened, I guess, in the past 4 or 5 months this all happened, and it was the same time period that he was working on this investigation that came out about Kamchirbek Toshiev, the head of the security services. And Bolot had said that prior to this, there was sort of a long quiet period when he wasn't being bothered, although he also mentioned there were sometimes cars outside his office he thought were shadowing him or his employees. But it does seem like the security services' interest in him and his outlet coincided with him working on this investigation. And of course, when you're working on investigation, it's impossible to keep it entirely secret what you're working on, because you're talking to sources, because you're doing research. Eventually, as the day of publication comes closer, you have to, you know, ask the subjects of your investigation for comment, and then it becomes very clear what you're working on. So I think timeline just leaves no doubt that this is sort of partly trying to prevent him from publishing it. And then once it was published, then it was retaliation. And again, it's just a really completely shocking use of state resources. And the accusations, again, that were made against Bolot, you know, one of the videos claimed that he was working against the interests of Kyrgyzstan in the service of both Russian and American security services. same time. I mean, I don't know where these people get these ideas. It's kind of these nationalist anonymous Facebook pages that publish this, but obviously they seem to have a connection to the services. So it is, yes, as you said, you know, it is shocking the amount of effort that went into this. And it's, I think, evidence of how personally Kamchat Bektashiev, the head of the security services, took Bulut's investigation, which was an investigation into his family members profiting from a scheme involving an oil business. I'm not familiar with the exact details of his investigation, but it involved corruption, and these things are very sensitive.
I have a couple of other questions about Temirov and the investigation itself. So as I did, Bruce, I'm sure you have read the investigation. So what was your takeaway from it?
You know, just how amateurish and clearly, you know, directed it was at him. You know, the timing is horrible, is so suspect. He's been investigating for a while, but he just does the report and then he gets trapped in this. And, you know, the fact that, for instance, that they tested Temirov, right? You know, to see if he had any drugs in his system. And it came up clean. It came up clean quickly, and then it came up clean again later. You know, the lengths they went to, like you were saying, to try to get this, and just that it was so poorly done. You know, I mean, if nothing else, it made Tashiev and his family look even more involved than it even if people had just listened to Tamirov's reports, you know, a report on this and what had happened. I mean, the speed with which they went to work to try to shut him down and keep him quiet was absolutely ridiculous. And like I said, for me, it just kind of showed everything that this was poorly planned, hastily planned, probably. And clearly what they were trying to do was discredit him to the fullest extent possible. You know, and Ilya mentioned that they even took stuff from his computers and posted, anonymous people posted it on the internet. So how did something confiscated by the police end up on the internet from, you know, on Facebook from anonymous sources? And, you know, again, what Ilya said about him being accused of working in the interest of both Russia and the United States to try to somehow subvert or discredit the Kyrgyz government. I mean, the whole thing was just stupid and serious.
Okay. Very interesting. Also, Bigayim, you have been leading one of the media policy institute in Kyrgyzstan until recently, so I'm sure that you are aware of Bulut Temirov and his work. So what is known about him in the country, about his work? I mean, with this, I'm sort of trying to get to the point that why is he constantly in trouble? It was not the first time that he was on the radar of the local authorities. He seems to have history of getting in trouble with the authorities. So what do you guys know about him and about his work and how he's known in the country?
The thing is that Media Policy Institute, we provide legal assistance to different kinds of journalists, mostly to non-governmental working journalists. And almost like for 4 years or maybe more, there are lots of investigations that are being conducted by journalists of different media outlets such as Globe, Cactus, Azatik, and some others. There is a high interest of journalists in fact-checking projects to make government accountable. So there is high interest from journalists to be a public watchdog and to provide citizens with public concern information. And Bulut Temirov was one of the leading journalists of this organization, which is called Fact Check KG, which started with conducting investigations on checking not credible information to raise awareness of public, of the society, to help them become more media literate. And after doing this project, he continued as being an investigator himself and opened his own media outlet, Temirov Live. And what our society is mostly interested in, they are interested in the problems with corruption, with what's happening in economics, so what is happening on the borders. So the public are actually interested in all these issues on which Bulut, through his investigation, he's trying to find the answer. So yes, first, during these years, he was attacked in the beginning of 2020. And this is actually another wave of attack on journalists. For me, it's unprecedented because, I mean, We had different kinds of waves of attacks on journalists, but now we see another round of more massive attacks, not only using state censorship actions like new laws limiting freedom of speech in the country, but also like in calls for interrogations without any obvious and legal reasons. We also have these reports on state media with blaming journalists of being disrupted by Western values. So, and we also have civil lawsuits against journalists. But for years, maybe more, we also see these coordinated attacks on social media, attacks on paid for trolls to divert attention of the public from journalistic investigations and from corruption to something not even related to the topic. And it's not only our trend in Kyrgyzstan, it's global trend. And that's why probably this is so powerful and important for us to pay attention to.
Right. Certainly, it looks like there are lines seems to be so blurry as to, you know, what gets you in trouble in the country. Obviously, we are going to talk about this a little bit later. But before, a couple of more questions about Temirov. So, Ilya, again, sort of the same question to you. In terms of Bulatov's trouble with the authorities, I mean, you have must have spoken to him a lot. There has to be, like, as Begaim was talking about, there are journalists doing numerous types of investigative work, research in Kyrgyzstan, and they are too getting into various form and sort of trouble, as Begaim was talking about. But Temirov seems to be constantly on the radar of the authorities. I mean, what makes him a particular target? And the second leg of my question is, in the face of all these harassment, in the face of all these attacks, what is he motivated by to continue this work despite those challenges?
I think one of the reasons he's such a frequent target is because he goes after very powerful people. He's very brave. You know, the previous major incident that I, you know, spoke with him and sort of that we covered was, as Begay mentioned, in January 2020, he was beaten. And that was after he published an investigation that exposed the wealth of Raimbek Matraimov, a former customs official who I know we've spoken on this podcast about those stories before. You know, that was a major project that was also a collaboration between us at OCCRP and CLOP and Radio Free Europe's Kyrgyz service. So, but Temirov was one of the first people to go after Matraimov, a top former customs official who was massively corrupt, and he was very powerful and politically influential. And back then, you know, in 2020, Bolot explained to me that he was offered money to stop publication. His website was attacked and taken down. You know, he was slandered by trolls online. And then these three young men beat him very savagely and brutally, and he believes that they were sent, you know, by Matraimov or by his allies. So, you know, Raimbek Matraimov and Kamchibek Tashiev, these are two of some of the most powerful people in Kyrgyzstan. And Bolot is not afraid to publish investigative stories about them. And that puts him on their radar. And I think in terms of his journalism, you know, he said actually that it was after that beating that he got the idea to start a new outlet, Temirov Live, which is his current outlet. And he said that was the turning point. You know, he didn't want to only do fact-checking. He wanted to do major investigations. And the style in which he does them, it's these kind of very nice, you know, nicely produced, well-explained YouTube videos. And to me, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of what Alexei Navalny does in Russia, or used to do before he was imprisoned. You know, it's a very kind of popular approach where you take complicated, corrupt schemes and you explain them, you know, with a very charismatic sort of presenter, and you have diagrams on the screen. And it's sort of a new thing for Kyrgyzstan. And, you know, Bolot says he feels that, you know, video is the future of this kind of journalism. You know, he thinks people don't read as much as they used to, and he's really eager to make sure that the Kyrgyz people see these investigations and are reached by them. So I think that combination, he goes after the most powerful people, and then he makes sure that ordinary Kyrgyz people can really understand what he's exposing. That makes him very problematic for the authorities, who don't like being exposed, and that makes him, unfortunately, a target.
So he is not in detention, as we understand, and but still charges are pending, charges involving the drug possession. So what the future holds for him in his outlet? Any thoughts on that?
I think there's been a lot of attention to his case. So I'm hoping that, you know, already even just a day, I think, or two after the raid on his office, some Kyrgyz people and activists and other journalists came out in a protest, you know, in his defense. So I think people know who he is. I'm hoping that people will come to his defense and make it clear that they expect the law to be followed. And it's clear that so many laws have been broken in the authorities' pursuit of him. And it's pretty clear that he should not be convicted, of course. He shouldn't even be charged in the first place. I don't know what will happen. You know, the Kyrgyz justice system is functioning more or less, not super great, but, you know, I think better than some neighboring countries. So I think there's a chance that, you know, he could go free, and hopefully that will be the case. I mean, technically, I think he faces up to 5 years in prison for drug possession charge. I mean, I really hope it won't get to that. Mm-hmm. But I think we also have to be honest. This is such a high-profile case involving a key ally of the president that, you know, I think, unfortunately, there's a very small chance that this will be sort of rationally decided in a court of law. I think it'll be a political decision, and I hope the decision will be to free him and to allow him to continue his important work, because he works in the interests of the Kyrgyz public. So hopefully this will not mark a continued decline in press freedom in Kyrgyzstan, because that would be very depressing. And we hope it won't come to that, and we hope that the authorities will see that this is cannot be the way they continue to act. Right, but right, you know, we'll have to see.
I guess we can also discuss what can help his case as it stands. Maybe let's do it a little bit later. Before that, Bruce, one more question. I mean, we heard in details Elia speak about the circumstances in which Temirov was harassed, and then now in the situation what he's in today. So I guess my question is, how familiar, similar it sounds with all the other cases that you have been following in Kyrgyzstan in terms of the harassment of journalists and independent media outlets there?
Really, in terms of Kyrgyzstan, it doesn't compare with a lot of other cases. There's been times where investigative journalists have gone after powerful figures before, and at least in the distant past, for instance, in the mid-1990s, there was a journalist named Zemira Sadikova, and she worked for a newspaper called The Respublika. And they were investigating property that belonged to then Kyrgyz President Oskar Akayev that was supposedly in Turkey. Like I said, they didn't go to these lengths. They used a court system to try to prove that this was libel. And then part of her punishment was that she was barred from practicing journalism for 18 months. But I mean, it wasn't beatings and raids, you know, on the building. And then, well, of course, social media wasn't a big factor way back then. But I mean, you know, generally in Kyrgyzstan, when there's problems like this, they have encountered a lot of problems, and very dubious charges have surfaced against them. But this one, like I said, it represents something new for Kyrgyzstan. The way this was orchestrated and how poorly it was orchestrated too, but you know, just that they would go after him and have this whole campaign ready to try to discredit him on multiple levels and get him out. We haven't seen anything like that before. It used to be, like I said, try to get them in court and get them shut down for articles they'd written that the people were saying weren't true, or for tax problems or something like that, right? But not actually going after the journalist, or in the case, you know, Ilya mentioned, and so did Begaim, that, you know, he'd been beaten. To kind of emphasize the point of what kind of figure he was, when he was beaten in January 2020, that was a totally different president and government at the time, right? So this is the kind of, unfortunately, the kind of thing that he attracts is, you know, this is two different administrations, and he's still been targeted by them.
So on that, Temirov's case is obviously, as you were talking about, Bruce, a chilling reminder of the changing realities on the ground for investigative journalism in Kyrgyzstan. So what else have we seen in recent days indicative of where things might be headed going forward? So let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. Thank you. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Meclis podcast. I'm joined by Begaim Usanova, a media expert and consultant and formerly the director of Media Policy Institute in Bishkek, Ilya Lazuski, managing editor at the OCCRP, also the editor of the recent investigation on the crackdown against journalist Temirov and his team, Bruce Panier, Ready for Freedom Liberties, editor of Central Asia blog Kishlok Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Ready for Freedom Liberties media manager and host of the Meclis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the growing challenges of investigative journalism in Kyrgyzstan. So, aside from Temirov's case, our Kyrgyz service, Azadtik Radyosu, has been reporting about the Prosecutor General's office initiating a criminal proceeding against local Kaktush media over the past 2 or 3 days. The excuse there is that they reprinted an article from the Tajik news agency Asia Plus about the situation along the Kyrgyz-Tajik border. I have two questions about this. Maybe I should invite you, Begaim, on that. First is, if you are aware about the case of Kaktush Media, has anything came out of that?
Yes, actually, it concerns me a lot, this case with Kaktus, together with Bolotimirov's case. It threatens, it has chilling effects on journalists, on the society, because everybody understands that cases are very similar with different content, but the form of the oppression is very similar and the roots are at the same place. So what happened with Kaktus website? They republished an article about the conflict on the border with Tajikistan. So, and they are now being accused that they promote a war. But why I'm so concerned that there is no any logic in this prosecution, in this case, but they still do that. So I think that in this conversation, there were some comparisons with Russia. They also very often do not have any logic. But here we see that there is no law too. So because Kaktus website, they reposted this article from Tajik website after conflict has happened. So they are not the source of this conflict at all. But now they're being accused that they provoked armed conflict. Everybody in the country knows that it was not them. It is border conflict that is active phase started last year, but more or less it is been going on for some time because of unresolved issues with demarcation and border delimitation. So definitely the article is not the cause of border conflict. And
sure, obviously. But Begaim, you know, I had a second question too. But before I go to my second question, so what I could gather about the Kaktus is, I guess several editors of Kaktus Media were questioned by the prosecutor's office as part of the criminal case as witness, and they were forced to sign a non-disclosure agreement on the content of the interrogation. So we really don't know what went on there. But that is, in fact, that is in itself threatening. So my second question is, so Temirov being stranded for his investigative work on corruption, the Kaktus Media is in trouble for reprinting the Tajik website article about the cross-border tension. So what else can get one in trouble in Kyrgyzstan these days? Any other examples?
I cannot predict.
The line looks so blurred.
I think everything might happen because we see that stakes are going up and not legally grounded reasons are being used. The problem probably, if you compare with previous periods of Kyrgyzstan independence times, that the society used to be more vocal in supporting journalists, and journalists were real mediators. But now we have, after social media development and coming into everybody's lives, journalists are not such a big power in Kyrgyzstan too anymore. It's my opinions. Nobody conducted actually the surveys, but if we remember October 2020 events, we can notice some similarities when social media actually played a huge role in changing power. And I mean, the exact actor who took all the power using society's concerns with stolen elections. So I think that what's disturbing right now and why all of us in the journalistic society, what we cannot predict, is that the society, even they know, they keep silence. They're not so supporting as it used to be. And this is not only because they're silenced and, because they're scared, but also because they have so many things to do and things are happening. We have massive flow of information, of new news that are happening right now. And so this is also one of biggest challenge probably this time.
It just looks so, I don't know, I'm just trying to find the right word to explain this. But let me bring you in, Elia, here. Earlier you had this another major report in partnership with the organizations like RFR and others, and you have so many local colleagues that you partner with in those kind of reports. So sort of a similar question. I mean, it looks like these days you never know when you get in trouble with the authorities. Like when you are dealing with sort of major investigative work involving one of the powerful people in the country, I guess the answer kind of seems to get obvious. But, you know, the situation, Cactus Media, just reprinting the article from the Asia Plus about the tension on the border. I mean, I'm just kind of trying to understand, I mean, how journalists navigate this blurred line, I mean, in terms of not to get in trouble.
It's always a challenge. I think, you know, unfortunately, not only in Central Asia, but in other regions of the world where we work, we have a lot of experience with this kind of pressure. And it's not, you know, it's not always government pressure that's the most dangerous. Sometimes it's organized crime. Sometimes it's the intersection of government and organized crime. Sometimes it's, you know, populist sort of anger that's stirred up by the government. There's different things that can happen. And there are places that are a lot worse than Kyrgyzstan, even accounting for what we're talking about today. So we have experience, you know, we have protocols for how to keep our journalists safe. And a lot of that involves being as loud as possible. The louder you are, the more international attention you get, the harder it is for someone to come after you. So we always, you know, urge everything to be republished as widely as possible. That's why we make sure, you know, when our local partner Klop publishes, we publish at exactly the same time. You know, we ask you guys when we partner with you to publish at the same time. Of course, you have enormous reach, so that's helpful. We publish in, you know, all languages, in Russian and Kyrgyz and English, so that can help sometimes. And, you know, as most dangerous period usually is before a story is published. Hmm. As with happened to some of Bullitt's colleagues, you know, that was the worst time for them, is when the story was in preparation, because that's when the authorities are the most desperate, because they know they can still stop it. So at that point, you have to publish as quickly as possible. And once you publish, then you just try to make sure you get attention and make it sort of more difficult to come after you. But it's impossible to predict. You know, we've been surprised by how little pressure has resulted from some of our investigations. And in other times, we are not expecting anything bad, and then it ends up being terrible. And of course, there are other forms of pressure, too. I mentioned a few of them earlier. Another one is lawsuits. You know, that's not something we usually worry about so much in Central Asia, but that form of pressure has also been applied against Klop. And we've seen that, you know, we cover corruption around the world, and it often involves properties in the United Kingdom or companies in the United Kingdom. And that leaves, because of the laws in that country, that often leaves you very vulnerable to libel lawsuits. We had to beat one back from Azerbaijan last year. And thankfully, that ended in a pretty favorable settlement. But yeah, the simple answer is that unfortunately there is no simple answer, but we just have to keep going and be as loud as we can.
Yeah, so on the same, like in Temirov's case, for example, the guy seems to be in trouble. So what can help?
Well, the first thing is you have to be a professional journalist. You can't be someone who is seen as, you know, some kind of troublesome rabble rouser. You have to be a professional, and you only speak the truth, and you just try to get other people to republish what you're doing and to pay attention to you. And you try to show the people of Kyrgyzstan, you know, your audience, that you are working to their benefit. You're working so that they can know what's happening in their own country, and so they can hold their officials accountable. And that's what Bulut does. And we've seen already, as I mentioned, people coming out on the street to protest his arrest. And he earned that because of his work, and because of how much he cares, and because of how good he is in exposing what the Kyrgyz people need to know. I think there's no magic formula. I think you just have to do good work and do it hard, and then partnerships with other journalists is often the thing that can save you. So whole model here to CRP.
Is there anything that international community can do? Like, I mean, is there any need for such help from international community? Does it help or not? I guess that's another story, but
I think it does, because I think that, you know, people in the country know that the international community is paying attention and expects them to leave space, you know, that they are obliged to leave for press freedom and for freedom of speech. Hmm. Yes, I think it makes a difference. In some cases, you know, like in Russia, that's often used by the authorities as evidence. Oh, you are part of an international plot, whatever. Hmm. But in some other countries, it really can't help. So, yes, the international community needs to pay attention.
Whose voice, Ilya, whose voice more relevant from within international community to speak up, to intervene on this in similar cases, in this case particular?
It's hard to say. I think it's going to be different in every case. I mean, in this case, I think, you know, Kyrgyzstan is a small country. And if its major international partners, you know, the United States, donors, countries, you know, Russia would make a big difference if they said something, because Kyrgyzstan is so dependent in many ways on Russia. I don't really expect that to happen. But you know, in the case of a country like Kyrgyzstan, I think, yes, pressure from a big country can make a big difference. Mm.
Okay. So, Bruce, just to kind of expand this, you know, Temirov's case and then the Kaktus's case, and obviously there are numerous other cases that we forgot to mention today. So all that kind of brings me to ask one question, and I'm sure that with the background and expertise, you are the best person to answer this question. So what happened to Kyrgyzstan? You know, the days when journalists used to be the mediators, as just Begaim said, those days seems to be like history. I mean, what just happened to Kyrgyzstan?
I agree that, you know, journalists have played a really valuable role and been really respected in Kyrgyzstan, you know, pretty much throughout its history. I think every single government administration that's been in has run into problems with journalists. You know, I mean, because the community, obviously the independent journalist community there is, or independent media is much more vibrant, I mean, and thriving in Kyrgyzstan. Really, there's, you know, they drown out state media effectively, the independent outlets in Kyrgyzstan, right? But every single government that's been in has had this kind of problem. I mentioned, you know, Akayev, but I mean, Bakiyev, when he came in, he wanted all the media to be independent in the country. And he said he was willing to withstand whatever criticism they brought against him. That only lasted about a year or two before he also got tired of hearing the criticism and started to take steps to reduce the space that you could report in. Atambayev was suing our Kyrgyz service and other media outlets. You know, Kaktus, which you mentioned, used to be Zona. I'm trying to remember if that's right or not. But that wasn't their original name. They were sued by Atambayev for reporting on his alleged property in Turkey, and Tekibayev's investigation into it too. So this has always happened. Every single administration has they've drawn a line somewhere. Now the difference is this is a very strange administration. You know, they came in by very strange means. It was after a sort of a small revolution in Kyrgyzstan. There was a power vacuum left over. These guys pushed their way in to power, and this seems to, what we're seeing is just, you know, another expression of the same thing that we saw in October 2020 when they took power, that they're much more aggressive in dealing with opposition than previous governments have been in Kyrgyzstan, which is the really worrying thing about this, is that these guys, you know, there's a lot of suspicion that they're connected with organized crime some way or another, you know, and so it's probably one of the worst periods in Kyrgyzstan's 30-year plus history to be a journalist. And, you know, what we just saw was, like I said, this was really a thug kind of raid on Temirov's property, you know, and the lengths they went to, you know, the bugging of his apartment and the setup of that poor young woman that was working for him and everything like that. I mean, it shows that these guys are willing to resort to depths or plumb depths that previous administrations weren't. And that's really worrying.
You are right. And I guess we're also very much out of time. You know, these kind of pressure, as you were talking about, Bruce, it did happen also in the past in Kyrgyzstan. Journalists faced on numerous level these kind of pressure, but the thing seems to be used to be better and are still better, I guess, when you compare Kyrgyzstan with neighboring countries. But Kyrgyzstan has also never been Sweden and is never going to be Sweden. But the circumstances in which the Temirov's case sort of unfolded, it is really, really chilling. Maybe one final question there. I think Begaim, you might wish to jump in here. So cases like Temirov's or Kaktus's or the other others that Bruce brought up examples of which. I mean, what kind of impact it is having on media landscape in Kyrgyzstan overall? I mean, what is this situation doing to the media, the independent media or the sort of relatively independent media that Kyrgyzstan is known for, used to known for within Central Asia landscape? So what is these kind of like a pressure, these kind of cases involving Temirov and Kaktus and others are doing to that relative independent media landscape in Kyrgyzstan?
Well, on one side, there is power is being gathered. On the other side will be resistance. So the problem is that what journalists are investigating and covering these stories, they actually make sense to this society because we have problems, economical, social, political problems. And after journalists would be silenced, that does not mean that this problem will be solved. So I think that our journalists understands that. They understand that truth is on their side, so they will continue to do their job, as Ilya said, that they should do it properly. Everybody makes mistakes, but not everybody apologizes for mistakes. So I think that the more our journalists become stronger and following standards and be more transparent on how they do their stories, the more they will get this trust from the society, and so they have to be stronger.
It's also refreshing to hear this from you, Abigail. Thank you very much for that. Just to end the conversation with sort of an encouraging word from Temirov himself, and I'm reading a final paragraph from the investigation which is triggered in this podcast today. Temirov, in which says, referring to, I guess, the reasons behind his troubles, he says, this means we have become stronger. Journalism is developing in Kyrgyzstan. Such things terrorize those in power. In the first place, all of this happens because the authorities have no principles. But the second reason is that investigative journalism has become very strong. So this is, again, a refreshing words from Temirov, who is currently facing sort of backlash for his investigative work in Kyrgyzstan. So with this, I unfortunately have to conclude the conversation here. Thank you very much, Begaim Osanova, media expert and consultant, and formerly the director of Media Policy Institute in Bishkek; Ilya Lazuski, managing editor at the OCCRP and the editor of the recent investigation on the crackdown against journalist Temirov and his team; and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free with the Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, very much for joining us today. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free with the Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. Until next week, bye-bye.